dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world, a major front of which at the moment, of course, is Ukraine and what is happening there that may bode ill not just for people who aspire to freedom in that part of the world, but perhaps for much of the rest of us as well. A man who is following it closely, has deep knowledge on the subject, and with whom we have the privilege of speaking from time to time is our first guest. He is Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He is an assistant professor and associate dean at the National Defense University in Washington, D.C. Seb, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. You have been, as I say, tracking things in Ukraine. Talk a little bit about the latest violence that's been taking place in eastern Ukraine. At whose hands is it taking place, and what does it foretell for the future?
Well, thank you, Frank. We've had some very disturbing reports recently. We've had Western journalists taken, kidnapped. We've had an American who is under the control of the pro-Moscow forces. And also we've had a member of the interim Ukrainian government whose body has been found with marks of torture on it. So we have an escalation of violence, and more importantly, we've had the Supreme Commander of NATO, General Breedlove, go on the record to say that the individuals that are masked are in fact Russian federal troops, which is something our politicians have not been willing to say so far.
Is there any doubt in your mind that that is exactly what's going on here, and that in fact, their unwillingness to call a spade portends more of this kind of aggressive behavior on the part of Russians?
Well, the argument made by General Breedlove is very well founded. He looked at the types of weapons they were carrying, their tactics, the way they moved, and I think that that's absolutely incontrovertible. But the thing that is very disturbing is that you have now clearly a disjuncture, a big gap between the political leadership of the alliance and its highest ranking military officers. So, you know, as we say that there should always be civilian control of the military, and the politicians should provide the room to maneuver the political space for the professional military to do its job. And here we have the reverse. We have the political elite not prepared to talk truth to the Kremlin, and a professional man say, enough is enough, here's the evidence, Russia is the provocateur, and I'm going to prove it to you. So this does not bode well for the health of the alliance, for the Brussels decision-making machine.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about Brussels and what it's up to at the moment with our next guest, Diana West. But Seb, talk a little bit about Joe Biden's visit to Ukraine, which has been underway the past 24 hours. His comments there, the representations that he's making on behalf of the United States, and the announcement in the past day or so that we are going to be dispatching some 600 U.S. troops to four different countries in proximity to Russia or to Ukraine. Is that likely to be perceived by Vladimir Putin and the Kremlin as a deterrent to future aggressiveness, or more of an evidence of an inadequate, irresolute West in responding to his aggression?
Well, the idea that the president's deputy has gone to Kiev should be welcome, but the actual concrete measures, it's a little bit of a case of being half pregnant. Do we really mean what we say? Do we see Russia as the aggressor? And are we prepared to protect our treaty allies in the region? Let's remember the numbers. we've had between 30 and 40,000 Russian troops deployed in the operation to annex Crimea. And then we have reports of another 100,000 troops being deployed across the Ukrainian-Russian border. And in response to that 140,000, America, the leading power of NATO, is deploying 600 soldiers, 150 each to the Baltic states and 150 to Poland. That looks so strange from a strategical perspective or a balance of forces perspective. What are the 150 supposed to do? It's symbolic, but in terms of actually protecting our treaty allies, it is less than adequate.
Yeah. Seb Gorka, you and I were in a meeting the other day with one of our colleagues, Dan Goray, who made the observation that what the president seems to be doing is to be putting into place wholly inadequate forces to do anything materially about the challenges that you're talking about from the Russians, but enough to perhaps create a rather messy conflict in the event that Putin is not dissuaded from acting further. As a serious strategic thinker at the National Defense University and writer on these subjects at Breitbart and elsewhere, Seb Gorka, what would your counsel be in terms of what we should be doing instead of these kinds of half-measures, half-pregnant gestures?
Well, if we really are prepared to send a signal, then it has to be a signal that is in the language of the Kremlin and the Moscow, and they understand power. So there is absolutely nothing to stop the next biggest exercise America plans being shifted to the European theater. And I'm talking about, you know, companies, battalions, even divisional level groupings. There's absolutely nothing to stop us having a very large conventional warfare exercise on the soil of Poland, which is in great threat, or even more so on the soil of the Baltic states. At the same time, that's the open gesture. That gives teeth to our diplomatic statements. But underneath that, we need to do asymmetric warfare. We need to take the fight to Russia, whether it's in terms of cyber attacks to send the message that we can hurt you, or whether it's in a form of covert sanctions, not overt ones. We're not going to hurt the oligarchs that support Putin by shutting their bank accounts in America, because they don't have bank accounts here. Where they have them is in offshore banks, especially in Cyprus. And America has the capacity to freeze those assets if they wish to, almost instantaneously, but one needs the will to take that kind of measure.
The will has been decidedly absent, compounded, of course, by the reluctance of some in Europe, at least, to, join us in making such efforts meaningful. You know, I had an interesting conversation yesterday, Seb Gorka, on our program with Cliff Kincaid, who called to my attention a new book that talks about Angela Merkel's background in East Germany, the early years of her career, mostly overlooked, but it's been sort of put into sharp relief by the controversy about the National Security Agency monitoring her phone calls. And while we're apparently not doing that anymore, the reason for doing it in part is her long-standing relationship with the East, shall we say, with Russia from the days when she was in East Germany, and certainly her present willingness to sort of serve as, if not an advocate exactly, certainly an apologist for Vladimir Putin in European councils. Is that complicating or otherwise contributing to the disarray that we're seeing at the moment in the West?
Well, the whole potential axis between Berlin and Moscow is a very complicating factor. We know, for example, that Chancellor Schröder, almost instantaneously after he left office as the head of state of Germany, became the vice president of Gazprom in Russia. So this has been something that's developed over time. And of course, we know the energy dependency of Western Europe, including Germany, upon Russian gas and oil is very high. However, we have had some interesting statements made by Merkel and others that there is a certain realization dawning that the Russia they wanted to get in bed with is not the Russia that invades Crimea or threatens the neighbors to the west. So there seems to be a glimmer of hope, but let's not forget that in many geostrategic formulae, economics is just under the surface.
Yeah, it certainly is, if not on the surface, and we're crashing into it. Seb Gorka, your insights in these matters is deeply appreciated, as is the work you do at the National Defense University and in so many other regards. Thank you for joining us from time to time. I hope we'll do it again very soon. Next up, as mentioned, I'll talk with Diana West about the EUSSR. And how that might be playing into the problems that was just discussed.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.